earth, sky.
He had actually witnessed a kingfisher bird diving down, you know, from a tree branch through the air and going into the water, creating very little splash. So he thought, I wonder if I could apply this principle to the shape of the front of the bullet train. And so they did model the front of the train like the kingfisher face. It's got a pointy part to it, just like the beak of the kingfisher.
You're listening to Sunny Robertson of the San Diego Zoo, a center for biomimicry research and education. Robertson said that biomimicry is about using nature to find sustainable solutions to human problems. She spoke more with Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl.
So, Sunny, at the San Diego Zoo, you use animals to help explain to the public the concept of biomimicry. Can you just tell me in brief, what is biomimicry?
Essentially, it is a way of looking at nature to inspire us, maybe to come up with a new product or a new way of doing things. It's a way to learn from nature how to do things differently, waste less, use less energy, look at really the secrets that nature uses in the ways that it functions.
Okay, so why is the use of animals so critical to the process of educating the public about biomimicry?
Oftentimes, to learn about nature, you have to really look at it. You have to really observe it. So you can get people closer to nature than they might, you know, not typically get to be. You don't usually get to be right next to a cheetah. People can really see up close, notice details, or even watch some of their natural behaviors happening. And so I think that's one advantage is just that close proximity and that connection that people can make and hopefully then be inspired to think of something innovative.
So let's talk about a particular animal that you use for education outreach at the zoo.
So typically we will have our kookaburra named Matilda come out and meet folks, and they get to see her up close. They can see that she has, you know, this large head with a narrow pointed beak. And many of the kingfishers have that same structure to their heads. And that is one of the inspirations that the Japanese train engineers took to reshape the front of their train.
Okay, so that's biomimicry right there. How can you base the design of a train off of a bird?
The connection is in Japan, they have these very fast, what they call bullet trains, several different models, but they were getting so fast that the typical bullet shape of the face of many of the trains was causing a loud booming sound when these trains would exit the typical train tunnels. And the reason this booming was happening, they discovered, is this cushion of air was being built up in front of that speeding train, you know, going like 300 kilometers per hour. And this cushion of air was building up in front of it. And then as it got inside the tunnel, there was nowhere for that air to move. And it just had to pop out the other side, kind of like when a balloon pops, just that air just explodes out of the small opening, making a sound. And it was waking people up that lived all around it. It disturbed the wildlife.
So the engineers were trying to figure out how to solve this problem. And it turned out that one of the engineers was a bird watcher.
Yes. One of the engineers on the team was a bird watcher. And in his experience, he had actually witnessed the kingfisher bird diving down, you know, from a tree branch through the air and going into the water, creating very little splash. And so he sort of recognized that same principle. Here's this bird moving from, you know, a lower density area with all this free air, going into the water, which had a lot of density, and yet it didn't create a big disturbance. As the bird entered the water, very little disturbance, very little splash. So he thought, I wonder if I could apply this principle to the shape of the front of the bullet train. Because again, the train, just like the bird, was moving from low density into that, you know, that tunnel where the air was all packed in, which would represent the water. And so they did model the front of the train like the kingfisher face. It's got a pointy part to it, just like the beak of the kingfisher. And sure enough, when they tried out that new model, it moved through that tunnel without creating the boom, and also saved them 10 to 15% more energy because it was more aerodynamic.
So, Sunny, that example of, let's call it, bullet train biomimicry is from the early 90s, but I know there's more cutting-edge biomimicry research going on right now. And in fact, I believe some of it has to do with snakes. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
We really can learn a lot from them. And scientists have recently discovered that the way the snake senses heat is it has little receptors. So we're talking at the molecular level, little receptors that actually sense body heat. Now, the interesting thing is you and I, all humans, have the very same receptor in our tongues, you know, in other parts of our body. And they call it the wasabi receptor. Essentially, that receptor is telling your body, yikes, be careful, don't eat too much of this. This could possibly be irritating. And in the snake, that same receptor tells them, ooh, something warm is coming by. So the reason this is interesting to scientists is because they've started to see that if we can understand the mechanism on how the snake's receptor works, because a snake is a much more simple animal than a human, maybe we can understand how to block those signals coming from the receptor. So for example, if a human is feeling something uncomfortable and stop some sort of pain or unpleasant experience.
What's the most interesting or significant comment you've gotten from a member of the public you worked with where you could see that the concept of biomimicry really clicked for him or her?
I think it's kind of the same type of comment I get from a lot of people once they've gone through one of our workshops or something is they're like, wow, now I can't stop looking at that tree and wondering why its leaves are shaped the way it is or why it has little hairs all over its leaves or how come its roots stick out the way they do. So I think it's basically most people start looking at nature in a way instead of like looking at a tree and saying, oh, look how pretty it is. It has purple flowers and green leaves and it's tall. They look at it and go, well, why is that tree tall? I mean, I guess it could have, you know, been only a 5-foot tree. Why did it have to grow 8 feet? And why does that tree, you know, have long spindly leaves instead of big, you know, open ones like that other tree? So it just sort of starts people looking at nature and wondering why, what is it helping the tree or the animal do? I think that's the biggest comment I've heard from people.
You've been listening to Sunny Robertson of the San Diego Zoo. Our thanks today to San Diego Zoo Global, connecting people to wildlife and conservation. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Jorge Salazar. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.